Hey there, Elizabeth.
Hey, Sheila. So we've been friends for what, nearly 14 years now?
I think about that. Yeah, although we've been really good friends for about half of that, but that's kind of a part of our story, isn't it?
It is. Well, at least for now, we're really good friends in large part because we've learned to be honest with each other. But it's not always perfect. Nevertheless, we're learning a lot by being imperfectly honest and thought you might too.
Hey there.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I had an interesting experience and it got me inspired to talk to you.
Okay, cool. I am all ears. Literally.
So I'm gonna be a little bit vague about the person that I had this experience with, just for confidentiality reasons,
Okay,
but
yeah, no, I understand.
so I went to this political event in Big Sky last week, and the candidate opened it up for questions. And shocker, I asked a question.
And I'm sure it was an excellent one.
And kind of sparked a little bit of a conversation with the candidate, and I went up and talked to the candidate afterward. So this is something I've talked to you about. I am getting really fired up about the ads that the Democratic senatorial candidate is running in Montana. He's running these ads that are bashing out-of-staters. He's saying that his opponent is not a real Montanan, is not a real cowboy, about how he lied about where he grew up. And one of the PAC ads, granted, this is not an ad run directly from the candidate, so I give it a little bit more leeway, but one of the PAC ads ends the ad by saying he's not one of us when talking about the opponent. And I am really frustrated about that because I feel like it's going to breed division and hate. And I feel like it's hypocritical because the Democratic Party is supposed to be the progressive, welcoming, accepting party. And I'm concerned because I feel that a lot of the people that are moving from out of state are wealthy individuals who are likely to vote Democratic and who are likely to donate to Democratic candidates. So I feel like they're just shooting themselves in the foot. So anyway, I shared this candidate who is not the senatorial candidate. And the candidate said, thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate your thoughts. And I've been trying to think through my own messaging. And so I went home, whatever, was glad that I shared that. The next day, I got a call from the candidate who said that and I'm trying not to reveal the gender, but the candidate said, I'm not really sure why I'm calling you, to be honest. I just felt like someone was telling me that I should make this phone call. And I have been thinking a lot about what you said, and I just wanted to honestly share that I'm struggling with how to get my message across in a way that invigorates my base but doesn't alienate others. And what inspired me by that phone call is we've had this conversation before, Sheila, and that we're just so frustrated with the division in our country and how politics has gotten to this mudslinging point. And I feel like maybe the role that we could play, because we've talked about both wanting to make a difference in this, is to have some conversations about how we can achieve our goals without creating such division in this country.
Right. Without demonizing and villainizing the other side, essentially.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you.
Well, I feel like we're both sort of trying to stay neutral here and not get too political. And I think that might be challenging. So I just kind of want to out that. And somebody said this to me actually on Sunday, and I thought it was such a good way to articulate it. So I was having this nice conversation with this person who I didn't know well at all. And I said, what's your feeling on talking about politics? I had a couple political experiences this week and I'd be interested in talking about it, but I want to respect your wishes if you'd prefer not to talk about politics. And he said, well, I mean, politics is about public service. And so I feel that my views should be public and I try to be as public as possible about it. I want to respect that people have different views than mine, but I'm going to just be out about my views.
Right. And my way of thinking with this, because I agree, we never envisioned the podcast or anything that we're doing to really have a whole lot of political overtones. That's not why we're doing it, but we are who we are. But I think this discussion between us is not really about what we politically believe. It's about the fact that we believe every voice should respect the other voice and allow it to be heard. And our voice is important, but other voices are important. That's what I think we want to work towards. And toward that point, it's so weird because today again, just the fact that I love Jon Stewart kind of can paint me a certain way, but I watched a segment from his show, I think yesterday, because he's on Mondays now on The Daily Show. And it was a conversation, kind of a debate, extremely interesting between him and Ken Buck. And it was absolutely wonderful. And they got to the end of it with agreement. And that was part of the conversation that they started out saying, well, we're not going to agree on anything. And then they got to agreement about the fact that there needs to be respect, essentially, kind of what we're talking about. So it's a lot of people who I really respect are kind of saying this from both sides of the political spectrum. I mean, I don't know Ken Buck's politics that much. I mean, I just know, you know, he essentially decided a few months ago to leave politics because he just couldn't deal with what was happening. And he left early. He left before his term was over. And he addressed that a little bit in that conversation. So I think it's part of, that's the bigger issue. It's respecting the basic tenets of what we've all been thinking our country stands for. The rule of law, respect for other people, decorum, not meanness, to just put it very I mean, non-meanness, I don't know. Kindness, but that sounds, so I think to go back to what you started talking about, that first thing where you were offended, because essentially, they were portraying like these outsiders coming in. They're not us. They're them.
Yeah.
And we're us. It's this, let's keep ourselves separate. Instead of trying to find our common ground and work with that, let's find our separate ground and lean into that.
Yeah, that's a great way to articulate it too. So I had an interesting conversation with someone who has very different political views than mine.
Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say very different, but different. And actually it was kind of this agreement that kindness and treating people like decent human beings is
civility.
Perhaps our common
civility.
ground. Civility, yes. Just to share, because what I said before, I feel that I want to speak publicly about my political views. Mm-hmm. I try to vote for a candidate rather than a party, but I have actually not voted for a Republican candidate once in an election since I've been 18. I have voted most of the time in the state of Colorado and have just felt mm-hmm. that the Democratic candidates in each of the elections I've voted for were more in mm-hmm. line with my mm-hmm. political views. So I am going to vote for the Democratic presidential candidate. Mm-hmm. And this person that I spoke to yesterday is on the fence. They are fiscally conservative, more socially liberal. The most important thing that came out of that conversation that's relevant to this is that I made the mistake of saying, I just have a hard time voting for a president who was just indicted on 34 charges,
mm-hmm.
who was just found mm-hmm. guilty of 34 charges.
Right. Felonies.
And felonies, yes. And she immediately fired back and that this is a witch hunt. Mm-hmm. It's all just politically motivated, and shut down.
Right.
And I said, okay, maybe. And this person is a former school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, so regardless of whether those charges were legitimate or not, mm-hmm. do you agree that his behavior is not the kind of behavior that you would want your students to emulate?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, you have a point there.
Okay.
And I just said, I just have a hard time voting for someone who will give our next generation the belief that they can treat people just flat out meanly. I mean, it's hard to argue that Trump has not been mean.
Right. Right.
Flat right. out meanly and right. be convicted of felonies and still become our president, not once, but twice.
Right. In addition to flat out dishonesty, which, you know, I'm a lot older than you, but it's not like I've always believed everything, every politician, those that I voted for, those I haven't, says. And we're getting better because the internet at fact checking, so we can immediately prove them wrong. But I think the biggest concern that seems to be coming out from people now is his perception that he doesn't even have to be that way. He can just blatantly lie and know that everyone's going to acknowledge that he's lying, and it's okay. And that we're not even attempting the civility. We're not even attempting to be honest. We're not even attempting to be kind anymore. And that causes a total breakdown of society, because those are kind of self-policing behaviors.
Right.
And if we see evidence that people who are not policing themselves succeed, then there will be a segment, I would like to count myself in it, that will still police themselves. And sometimes it's based on people's spiritual beliefs. Sometimes it's just their moral background, whatever. But there are people in the middle who are very conflicted, especially if it comes down to feeding their families and succeeding in a job and proceeding through life with some level of success. And that's where the erosion comes, because we're given carte blanche, whatever.
Yeah.
Because everybody's accepting of it. nobody blinks anymore. And I think that's where the dialogue needs to be. It doesn't need to be about should these charges have been brought. I mean, I was a prosecutor. I know there's prosecutorial discretion decisions. And yes, the decision to do so is what they're challenging. But there's also court cases going on as we're speaking against Democrats, where there was prosecutorial discretion about bringing them. But the bottom line, again, having been in the legal system, is once you're in that courtroom, it's the evidence. And if there's not enough to, I mean, you can be indicted, as they love to say, a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich, but they can't convict a ham sandwich. I don't know if you'd ever heard that expression. And that was, I think, proven. And it's been proven time and again, because juries tend to take their jobs very seriously. And so maybe I'm getting lost in the weeds here, but that's our judicial system. That's something we shouldn't erode. And I feel like we're heading down that path. Like, we've already eroded trusting our elected officials. We've already attempted to erode elections. We have an election, somebody's declared a winner, there's appeals, but no, maybe they're not the winner. And so it's, I mean, we could point every branch of government, every part of our life. It's like we're eroding all of those things.
I want to think about what we can actually do about it, because
there's
a lot of people really on both sides who are just kind of feeling helpless right now.
Yes.
And for myself, I want to do a couple things. I want to make an effort to find people who have different political views than mine. Who are willing to have a conversation that does not involve mudslinging,
right?
To better understand. For instance, one of the interesting things that came out of that conversation is that this person is very concerned that other countries, in her opinion, are not afraid of Biden, and that terrifies her. And in hearing that, it helped me just have more empathy. If someone is scared for their own safety and for their children's safety, for their grandchildren's safety, they're going to act in a certain way. And it might be harder to get through to them when they're acting out of fear. So anyway, I would like to have more conversations like that. And Sheila, we've talked about this, but neither of us know that many people who are actually going to vote for President Trump. And so I would like to just publicly state that if you are one of those people, I'd love to talk to you and have a conversation about it. So please reach out.
Yeah. So you're sending it out to the universe.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that I would really like to do is to share a little bit about what does motivate me, and I think will motivate others. Because when this candidate reached out to me and just kind of said that they really want to make change, the polls are telling them to say one thing, but that feels divisive to them. But they can't make that change if they aren't elected.
Mm-hmm.
So Sheila, I totally agree with everything that you said. And if you're willing, I think it might be interesting to use what's happening in Montana as a case study on how you might be able to achieve the same thing without a divisive message. And I like to send this to the candidate who reached out to me. Are you up for that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
No, I, hey, I'm like you. I feel helpless in terms of trying to figure out what I can do to counteract some of the negativity that we seem mired in. So if this direction can help in a lot of ways, including helping me get out of that, I would love it.
Yeah, great. So the reason why many Montanans are upset about the influx of out-of-staters, the primary reason is that property taxes have gone through the roof. People's taxes have increased by 100% in some cases. People are forced to choose between purchasing medication or paying for their home. People are being forced out of their homes altogether because they cannot afford to keep them. And I understand that I am a part of the problem.
Right.
I cashed out of Colorado, which is maybe 15 years ahead of Montana and experiencing the problems that Montana is experiencing now. I profited from an increase in real estate values. I bought a home that even the highest paid workers in the place that I live cannot afford to buy.
Right. Right.
And I feel like I'm fairly informed because we're experiencing similar problems as I experienced in Colorado. And I'm not actually sure that most of the people who move here are aware of how big of a problem it is. And so I think the first suggestion that I would have is, rather than telling people that they're unwelcome, maybe ask them if they'd be willing to hear some of the challenges that Montana is facing and invite them to be a part of the solution.
Right. That's the perfect way of phrasing it. Because as you said, and that's the expression, if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
Right.
In a lot of cases. So they, I think, educating people, the people that you're talking about, that no, even if you don't feel like or want to be part of the problem, you are. Just by your mere presence.
Yeah.
So that's a given. So own it and then decide if you want to be part of the solution or you just don't care. Because, you know, unfortunately, neither of us are, you know, Pollyannas or the eternal optimists, whatever. Yeah, there's going to be people that are just going to say, but it works for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure those are the people we're directing any of this at.
Right. Well, and I think that there's two challenges. There's one of what's the broad message that you have in ads and things like that. And then there's also what's the message that you have to individuals who might donate to your campaign. It's easier to take this approach of educating on a one-on-one basis. So I recognize that. But I was thinking about if you have to do it broadly, there were a couple things that really stood out to me that I did not realize about Montana that would be compelling messages, in my opinion. The first is we are 51st in the nation for teacher pay, even behind a territory. I can't remember which one, but 51st.
Wow. And teacher pay is pretty low. So
yeah,
all over, even the number one state is probably not fantastic. So the 51st.
No. So terrible.
Wow.
Terrible.
Yes.
We are an island for abortion rights. I didn't fully realize that either. So we have the most access to abortion, and it's still somewhat limited, of any of the states surrounding us. And those are big geographical areas. So for someone to go outside of that radius is really expensive.
Because you're big out west. So even if there's not a huge population, realistically speaking, you have to travel to another state. And so getting in your car and driving hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles is what you're confronted with in this region that you're talking about.
Right.
It's not like the South where, you know, you can kind of find a state not too far away. Like you said, Montana is like an island in the midst of this huge ocean of anti-abortion rights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And our current governor has been trying to reduce those rights pretty fervently.
Mm-hmm.
And I think going back to what I said before about the lack of affordable living options, I didn't really realize how dire that was. So just as one example, when I lived in Helena, I learned that the number of homeless high schools or school students in the Helena school district increased by fourfold from COVID to now, because the cost of homes increased so much. And when I heard that there were initially heard that there were a lot of homeless students, I was thinking that these were kids who, you know, had fights with their parents or had drug problems or whatever and moved out. But it's homeless families.
Families.
That had been forced from their homes because they can no longer afford them. And now they're living in vans at campgrounds and in hotel rooms and in their cars. Just really heartbreaking.
Yeah. So I want to interject for a minute with a question I'm having.
Yeah.
In terms of when, you know, the premise of this is the campaign was kind of like these new people coming in who aren't us. It's essentially the people that are coming in, AKA you.
Yeah.
This is your residence because you can't vote in two states. So these are not like skiers coming in and then they leave because it's their second home. These are people who are taking up residence in Montana. That's who you're talking about.
Well, that's a great distinction. So it's both. It's both people who are taking up residence, but it's also people who are coming in and buying large parcels of land and large second homes for high prices, which are driving up the prices overall.
Right. So that's puts a little bit of a kerfuffle in the whole thing.
Well, yes and no.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes and no. So yes, from a voting standpoint. No, from a donation standpoint. So one of the problems that resort communities have in general is that people tend to be more philanthropic in their place of primary residence.
Mm-hmm.
And then the place that they vacation to has a much harder time raising money for the services that power those vacation homes.
Right, right.
So I think, you know, when I think about a message that would be compelling to both second homeowners and full-time residents is to just state some of these facts about how dire the situation is. You don't need to say that the opponent is a wannabe cowboy. You can just say that we have a lot of homeless kids in our school district.
Right. I mean, you want to be, even if it's your second home, there's still a certain pride associated with being a part of that state, even if it's part-time. At least in a lot of people, there is. You form an attachment. And if you're presented with these things that you're talking about that are so dire, like so, I hate to say embarrassing because it's so far past embarrassing, I agree with you. I think those are very compelling issues that could definitely get people energized and saying, look, please be inclusive. We can work with you.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Tell us how we can work with you.
Yeah. And I called a gentleman who is one of the best fundraisers I've ever met in my entire life today, who lives in Vail. So he's sort of come up with some similar challenges. Mm-hmm. And I asked him how he addresses this question, and getting people who don't initially feel a sense of responsibility to support the community that they've either recently moved into or have a second home. And I said, how do you get them engaged without alienating them? And he had a piece of advice, which I thought was really good. And that he said, the most important thing is to research what they've done elsewhere. He said, I look for the people who have been most charitable in their hometown, and I figure out what areas of philanthropy light them up. And I get a conversation with them and just say, you've been so charitable, and thank you for the good work that you're doing. I'm so glad that you have made this your home or second home. Welcome. Could I just tell you some of the things that we're up against to see if you have any interest in plugging in here? And he said 9 times out of 10 that people will listen and often will write a check. And to me, I think there's two things that are effective there. One is, you know, just authentically saying, like, thank you for being charitable.
Right.
And the second actually came up with my experience when this candidate called me. So when I've helped startups raise money in the past, I've always given the advice that oftentimes when you ask for money, you get advice. But when you ask for advice, you often get money. And this is especially true with entrepreneurial people. Because entrepreneurs like to work through problems and they like to be a part of the solution. And I really noticed that. So I made a donation to this particular candidate who called me. But when that candidate called me and invited me to really help them work through the solution, I actually wanted to give more.
Right. Right. And I'm going to interject, because when you were talking, I just kept thinking, oh my God, I'm going back to Boulder working with you and the whole entrepreneurial startup world, where we were kind of not teaching, but it was a part of what we were doing with the really, you know, early stage startups, is advising them that when you're going out for money, even if it's at the angel stage, make the person that you're trying to engage with respect the communication. Like, if they feel like you're seeing them as a person, not just a check, and you're hearing them and you're listening to them, then, as you say, you ask for advice and you get a check, because that's what people yearn for, to be seen. I mean, it all comes down to that basic thing. And now we're getting into real touchy-feely thing, but it translates into every aspect of life, that really, I think it does. And I think the advice that you just received from the Colorado fundraiser, I mean, that's, having done a fair amount, I've worked with nonprofits in the development end of it. And the first thing, you know, that you do is you research. And you learn a little bit about the person that you're going to be trying to connect with. And they respect that.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying find out, like, Google them and then you have all this information. You have to present it in a way that, I did it because I'm interested in you.
Right.
And you have to be authentic about it.
I think that's so key. And the other thing that this candidate did that I really appreciated is they were authentic about the fact that they didn't have all the answers, that they were unsure. This is one of the things that is hardest for me in politics, is that candidates are often unwilling to admit that they don't have all the answers.
Right.
And that
right.
they might not always be right.
Right.
A lot. And I'm not totally sure if authenticity can win an election, sadly. Mm-hmm. because I haven't seen that happen very much. But
No,
I am hopeful.
Yeah, no, I don't. And part of it, because we're probably going to sound like, you know, neophytes or newbies or whatever, you know, I mean, it's not just one-on-one sitting down with somebody who has deep pockets. Like, there are organizations that donate. And so there's a lot of decision-making going on in that forum that
yeah.
has just nothing to do with, gee, do you see me? So,
yeah.
You know, yeah, grassroots elections, small elections, but when you start getting up levels, other things come into play. But if you can impact on the grassroots so it impacts on those institutions, then I think that's where the change starts to happen. And I think we have much more of an ability than we did 20, 30 years ago to do that because of the internet and social media, which doesn't always work well in this situation, but there are ways to turn it around and work to the advantage, you know, have it be for good, not evil, essentially, you know?
Yeah.
I hate, you know, good and evil. I'm not categorizing anybody as good or evil. I'm just saying it can be a very uncomfortable place a lot of the time. Because as we were saying at the beginning of this conversation, people like to villainize other people. So let's see, is there a way of making the opposite the way people want to be? Have that be cool. I mean, I think there are ways to have that. I do. We just haven't quite figured them out.
Well, being authentic is becoming trendy, actually.
Yeah, I know. And I hate that we even have to say something like that, that being authentic is trendy.
Yeah.
Like those two thoughts kind of collide in my mind. It's like, but that's exactly what I was saying. You just said it a different way.
Just to kind of close the loop on something that you were saying, I mean, neither of us have won a political campaign. So I want to state that I'm not sure if being authentic in messaging will actually win an election.
Oh, God.
But
completely. Yeah.
I have raised a lot of money. And I am sure that authenticity can raise you money. And
right.
In particular, I just want to share that if any candidate wants to raise money from entrepreneurs, successful entrepreneurs,
right,
inviting them to become a part of the solution is the best way to engage them.
Right. Right. And the money is the seed. And
yeah,
if you have the money, then the messaging, even though, yes, you're being authentic and you can't change your messaging then, because you can't present one face to donors and another to the voters. But once you have that money, you can figure out, I hate to use this word because it makes it sound like you're being a little duplicitous, but you can massage it a little bit because that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about raising money from entrepreneurs is, especially probably in Montana and in other resort communities, a lot of entrepreneurs move there after they've sold their business. And from my experience, and I've experienced this myself too, the biggest fear of entrepreneurs is becoming obsolete, that they are
irrelevant.
No longer needed.
Irrelevant.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's was a thought that just came into my head, because they're not getting that high energy hit every day, and they miss it because that's who they are. That's why they succeeded. So
yeah, so if you can tap into that, that's mm-hmm. gold. If you can figure out mm-hmm. what an entrepreneur really loves doing and how they can add yeah. value, and
right.
invite them authentically to add value to you,
yep.
you can raise a ton of money that way.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know far better than me, but just in my, you know, that my time learning at the knee of the master with you in Colorado, and then even just staying kind of plugged in my own head about it. Yeah, Because it is, to go back to what I said a little while ago, it is human nature. Like, we all have that basic thing inside of us. We just exhibit it in different ways,
yeah,
depending on how much money we have, how we were brought up, the things that we've run up against since our childhood. So all of that stuff is in there.
In case anybody listening to this happens to know Chris Sacca, he has recently moved to Bozeman, Montana. And I think he's a perfect example of somebody that we could maybe engage by inviting them to be part of the solution. So if anybody listening to this would like to connect me to Chris Sacca, I would be very grateful for that. All right. Well, I'm feeling like we've covered a lot of ground here. Is there anything want to say before
I guess I want to get a little bit more clarity, because I really enjoyed this conversation.
Me too.
And if you had to categorize, what is it we were trying to do with this podcast? I don't really think, and I don't know that I would like, we just want to raise money for candidates we like. That's not it, right?
No.
Okay. No. So you tell me.
My goals with this were to share some thoughts on how to connect with people who have different opinions in general, how to engage people in a way that inspires action in general, and how to craft a message that is encouraging rather than divisive.
Right. And just the thought as you were saying that, and it occurred to me earlier in the conversation, you were talking about like you vote for the candidates, not the party. I would take it a step further in terms of voting for the issues. And like when you talk about appealing to people in Montana about the low teacher pay and the homelessness, et cetera, there could be candidates from different parties who have similar opinions on those issues. And so they can choose, or they can donate to both of those candidates if there are, if it's a field that has a lot of different, you know, so that they can at least get a shot one way or the other. You know, I hate to equate it to a horse race, but you know, you put your money on a few different horses because you want to have more of a chance. The one crossing the finish line is the one that thinks like you, not the horse, obviously, in a race.
Right.
But you get my analogy. Because, you know, I throw so many at you. You learn to try to figure them out.
Yeah. Well, and my other goal in this is to just publicly state that I really want to have conversations with people who have different opinions than mine.
Yeah. As do
I.
I'd
like to understand the opposite side of my story.
Yes. Yes. I completely feel the same way.
And unfortunately, because I've lived in very homogenous communities, I don't know that many people that bill.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. I'm just in a place where I don't know that many people, period. It has nothing to do with the community. I'm just, you know, that's my place right now. I just don't know that many people. I mean, I'm actually living in one of the most diverse cities in Maryland. And it's like, I just don't know that many people.
Well, we'll work on that. Are there any other goals that you wanted to get out of this?
No, I'm just still processing. I mean, I love it, but you know, you did catch me a little bit by surprise. But
which I really appreciate that you allowed me to just do this on the fly. Thank you.
That's what I love about this. It's like we haven't talked in a little while. We haven't recorded, and it was just when, you know, you first broached it before we started recording. I've had a few different experiences, and I think it could be an interesting recording. Do you want to record? I had no idea. No idea. It was like, okay. I know it's not going live. We're not a live feed, so we're good.
Well, I appreciate it. And I love the way that you articulated some of this on this.
It's fun.
We should close it out.
Yeah. I think we should too. I do. Yeah.
All right. All right. Until next time. Bye, Sheila.
Until next time. Bye, Elizabeth.
The Imperfectly Honest podcast is for informational, educational, and entertainment purposes only. This podcast does not provide medical advice and is not intended as a substitute for the diagnosis and treatment provided by a licensed, trained physician, psychotherapist, or other health professional. Note that, notwithstanding that any of the guests on this podcast may be licensed professionals, no one on this podcast is providing or seeking to provide the listeners of this podcast with any medical or health services. You should not rely on the information or content presented during this podcast, and you should not make any health or medical related decision based in whole or in part on such information. Consult a healthcare professional licensed in your state for all matters relating to your health, and do not disregard any medical advice, diagnosis, and/or treatment provided by your healthcare professional. This podcast expresses the individual opinions of Elizabeth, Sheila, and their guests, and does not constitute professional medical or mental health services. In sharing their experiences, names, places, and other identifying information may be changed to protect the privacy of the people involved.